So I had a dream the other night, and I know people hate hearing about other people's dreams, but this
I love it.
This one's relevant to the show.
Okay.
I dreamt that you and I were doing the podcast at Seminar Brewing.
Okay. Seminarbrewing.com.
And you got up and left in the middle of thanking the listeners,
welcome,
thanking the guests,
to wrapping chop
up the
shop.
Show, so I had to do it myself.
Watch.
Okay.
Shop.
And I was like, where the hell did he go? And
where did I go?
And I turned and looked, and waiting in line at the bar was Mick Jagger.
Okay.
And you walked up to him and tried to give him some, like, clever line. Mick Jagger was not impressed.
Oh, really? Well, I'm not the one who said I was going to retire 40 years ago. This is not a dream interpretation podcast. Welcome to Cinema Chop Shop. This is Season 6, Episode 4. It's a movie podcast that concedes that remakes are going to happen. So why shouldn't movie buffs
like us
decide who is recast in those iconic roles? My name is...
Traversity Blues.
Yeah, okay. And I am joined, as always, here in the shop by my co-host and co-producer, Anna Shonda, a.k.a. Pope Sean Paul II.
Oh, wow. Okay.
A.k.a. Most Shaunted.
Wow.
In addition, we were hoping to be joined tonight, but she's bailing on us once again. Cheliverance, a.k.a. Chell Harbor, will not be here once again. And further description of the show, the tagline says, watch, chop, retrofit, because essentially that's what we do. We watch older movies, sometimes classic films, sometimes tire fires, and then we hypothetically retool them with new parts, aka contemporary actors. And quick disclaimer, we're not actually in favor of all the reboots and sequels and remakes. This is more of an exercise in satire and irony. It's a hypothetical journey that we want you, the listeners, to go on with us. So we're going to start it off with our first segment, which is going to be movie news. And it's a little bit of a slow week for movie news, I think, because we were both on Christmas vacation for the past week and weren't paying that much attention. But we do have a few stories, and we're going to do the RIPs first out of respect. We've got a couple of actors. First, we've got an English actor whose name was Tony Britton. He was English and his name was Britton.
Ironic.
He died on December 22nd and he was 95. Mm. He died of natural causes.
He had a good run.
He was in Sunday Bloody Sunday and The Day of the Jackal. Also, we have the death of Jerry Herman, who was an American composer who did music for Hello Dolly, and also MAME, M-A-M-E, Mammy, MAME.
You got me there.
He died on December 26th at the age of 88, also of natural causes. So rest in peace to those two gentlemen. Then we've got a little bit of Star Wars news. Did you notice the lesbian kiss?
Oh, of course.
At the very end? Well, apparently in Singapore, they did not notice that, because Disney cut it from the movie to avoid getting a higher rating. And by that, I mean a higher age limit that you had to be this old to be able to see it. Because in Singapore, they're not down with girl-on-girl lesbian kissing, even if it was a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's fine. And they chose to leave in the Poe, Finn, Rey, you know, orgy at the end of the film after the credits.
Oh, that was just a group hug.
No, you had to stay for the credits. They just throw down.
Oh, that's not true. That's the stinger, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, then, this is a link that you sent to me. I think you sent this to me on Christmas Eve. Kevin Spacey posts a bizarre new video as Frank Underwood to champion kindness. Now, what's the deal with this psycho?
This is the second year in a row he mm-hmm. has done this. He's
after getting fired from the show.
Oh, absolutely. Fired from the show, in disgrace. And yeah, this time he recorded the message to the world on his YouTube channel for the second year in a row.
That's ridiculous. And I certainly hope it's not going to become a Christmas tradition. Next up, to no one's surprise, the cast of Greta Gerwig's Little Women says that Laura Dern was the, quote, mother hen on the set. Now, I don't know if she actually plays the mother of the March girls. That's probably the case. But seems very in style for her to kind of take those young actresses under her wing.
I agree. And I think that my opinion of her has steadily climbed over the course of us doing the show.
Yeah. All right. And then Ryan Reynolds says that Deadpool 3 is in the works at Marvel. So this begs the question, is Deadpool 3 a Disney movie?
Yeah.
Technically it is, right? So will it continue with the R rating? The first two were definitely rated R.
It has to. I can't see them rolling it back.
Has Disney ever released a rated R movie?
Possibly. Dana. Possibly. yeah, I would say there's a 50-50 chance.
All right. Next, we've got just the continued dominance at the box office that Star Wars Rise of Skywalker, all opinions aside, it's made $550 million globally so far since a week ago.
Has it been a week?
Yeah,
wow. Yeah, I guess so.
$550 million worldwide in a week. Now, I guess we're going to reserve our opinions until the 2019 movie marathon in just a little bit, right?
Right.
Okay. So that will wrap us up on movie news for this week, which brings us to our next segment. As soon as the phone rings, there it goes. That means it's time for the Department of Corrections with Chief Corrections Officer Dana.
One of these days, when one of you lads mention Kentucky, I'll get a proper shout out. On to the corrections. Phoebe Cates was in Bright Lights Big City, Shag the Movie, Drop Dead Fred, and Princess Caribou, among other films after Gremlins. If that's retirement, it's a pretty busy retirement. Now, as far as the rumors that Jamie Lee Curtis is a hermaphrodite, it's long-standing but unconfirmed. A little jailbird pointed me toward a Snopes article about it, and the site has declared the rumor to be false. Joey Poole with the assist! Hope Santa Claus brought y'all some extra smokes.
All right. Thank you, Dana, for that. This particular edition of the Department of Corrections Department, it kind of rings true. It echoes of truth. I'm not really sure, but it resounds in my mind. It just keeps reverberating with me. And so that will close the doors on the Department of Corrections Department for this week, Kentucky edition. And so that brings us to the theme of the episode. In celebration, ? Of his upcoming 81st birthday on December 29th, we're talking about the films of John Voight. Now, I know that opinions may vary as to his personality / character as a person. Not as an actor, but as a person. But I think that you have to admit he is a very accomplished actor.
Yeah, in preparation for this week, I told myself to set my personal
feelings
aside for John Voight and some of the things he said, not just recently, but historically, and just look at what's on film, look at what's on the screen. And
separate the art from the artist.
True.
So John Voight he's still with us, an American actor. He's the winner of one Academy Award, having been nominated for four. He also won the Golden Globe, four-time Golden Globe Award winner, and has so far been nominated for 11 Golden Globes. He is the father of Angelina Jolie, as well as actor James Haven. So we're going to be talking about John Voight today. We're going to be talking about his movies and who would play him in those movies if they were potentially remade. I don't know that any of his movies have been remade. He's been in some remakes. He was in Manchurian Candidate, the remake.
Right.
But that's interesting. I don't know that he's actually been in a movie that has been remade. Now, Catch 22 is a TV show now.
Right.
But I don't know if it's the same premise or not.
I think it is. And you know, I didn't have time while we were doing the holiday travel thing, but I wanted to do the chart that I did with Cousin Eddie and chart his rise and decline in his
yeah.
Rotten Tomato ratings, using just Rotten Tomatoes as the metric. I noticed that a lot of his films were very highly rated
early
in his career.
Yes.
And he seems to have fallen into this path of playing either a father figure
or a villain.
A villain, a governmental agent leader mm-hmm. type. And typically those are very poorly received roles. I think his highest rated movie was a 100% Rotten Tomatoes for a film that came out 2 months after 9/11. And the name of it escapes me, but just coincidentally came out, and it kind of dealt with some of the same themes.
Yeah.
So it was really, it resonated with a lot of people at that time.
Gotcha. All right. Well, with that, we are going to go ahead and go into our next segment, which is the Midnight Double Feature. And this is where we each talk about two films that are within the catalog of the person at hand. This week being John Boyd, and talk about why they would be good movies to pair for a public viewing, back-to-back, double feature style. And Sean, what is going to be your double feature tonight?
All right, I'm going to start out with 2001's Lara Croft, Tomb Raider.
Oh, not to be confused with the XXX version, Womb Raider.
This was the first adaptation of the video game series, Tomb Raider. Starring the titular Lara Croft.
Mm-hmm.
This was a just out and out cash grab
yeah.
from the studios. But Angelina Jolie is in the film with her father, John Voight. So that is kind of neat, I guess, in that regard. But John Voight plays Lord Richard Croft.
Lord Richard Croft.
And
Croft.
And I do believe that the Crofts are British, which means that Jolie and Voight both affected British accents.
Not well, though.
Oh, of course not. No, this is trash cinema at its finest. And it really did a poor job of capturing a lot of the same magic, I guess you could call it, of the video games. But they were in it, and there you have it.
Okay.
I'm going to follow that up with 2007's National Treasure, Book of Secrets.
Okay.
Now
a much superior film.
Now, I'm skipping right over National Treasure because we will be speaking about it very soon.
Okay.
Very, very soon.
Yes.
In our Secret Societies episode.
Sneak preview.
But this film is the sequel to the first National Treasure, starring Nicolas Cage
mm-hmm.
and John Voight playing the role of his father.
And so in both of these films, do Nicolas Cage and Angelina Jolie come from a broken home?
Disney style. let me tell you about the National Treasure Book of Secrets. It is another popcorn flick.
Yeah.
I call this one National Treasure MacBook of Secrets because it is nothing but product placement for Apple. Everywhere you look, there is an iPod, there is a MacBook, you know. Cutting edge technology.
I just shed a tear for my dead iPod.
But check out some of the people that were in this film. Besides Nicolas Cage, you've got John Voight, Helen Mirren.
Oh, I love her.
Ed Harris, Harvey Keitel, and Ty Burrell. So you've got some big names
yeah.
in this really, really bad film. But also the other tie that binds besides John Voight playing a father figure, there are colons in each of the titles.
Hey, there you go. Da Vinci Code for Dummies.
Yes, very good.
All right, so my double feature, I'm pairing a couple of war/spy movies. The first one is called Catch 22. It's from 1970. It is the superior film in my double feature. It is 79% on Rotten Tomatoes. It was directed by someone you've called a hack in the past, Mike Nichols, who directed Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, The Graduate, The Birdcage, and the movie Wolf. It's a dark comedy war satire, and it's based on a novel by Joseph Heller, starring Alan Arkin, John Voight, Norman Fell, Mr. Roper?
Mr. Roper.
Bob Newhart, Chelsea, and also Art Garfunkel in his screen debut. Martin Sheen, Charles Grodin, and Anthony Perkins.
Talk
are all in
about
this movie.
An all-star cast. Yeah.
And more.
Yeah.
Even you've also got Orson Welles shows up as the general. The general plot is it's a scathing war satire that follows Captain John Yosarin, played by Alan Arkin, a pilot stationed in the Mediterranean who flies bombing missions during World War II. Attempting to cope with the madness of armed conflict, Yosarin struggles to find a way out of the wartime reality. Surrounded by eccentric military officers, such as the opportunistic First Lieutenant Milo Minderbinder, played by John Voight, Yosarin must resort to extreme measures to escape his dire and increasingly absurd situation. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It's a great movie.
It's a great book.
But I was pairing this with another movie that had to do with the Cold War and kind of spying and stuff like that, but it's a much more serious movie. It's called The Odessa File from 1974. It's got a 64% on Rotten Tomatoes. It was directed by Ronald Neame, who's a British director. He directed The Poseidon Adventure, Gambit with Michael Caine, and also Meteor.
Oh, nice.
Following the suicide of an elderly Jewish man, investigating journalist Peter Miller sets out to hunt down an SS captain and former concentration camp commander. In doing so, he discovers that, despite allegations of war crimes, the former commander has been a man of importance in industry in post-war Germany, protected from prosecution by a powerful organizer and former SS member called Odessa. Boring. So if you want a real double feature with Catch-22, just watch Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah, of course.
They would go great together. Yeah. That's my double feature that I redacted part of.
How was Voight in that?
He's fine. He's doing a German accent, which is kind of off-putting, but
well, you know, he did the same thing. He was in that that Pope movie.
Pope John Paul II.
Yeah,
Pope Sean Paul II.
But wasn't he of German descent or something?
Pope John Paul II was Polish.
Polish. Okay, yeah. There you go. So yeah, Voight likes to do bad accents.
Yeah, badly. That will finish us up on the Midnight Double feature for this week. And that brings us into our feature segment. Listen to that music from Dr. Bob. And we're going to be recasting a couple of very good films, a couple of iconic films, I would say. Not a tire fire amongst them. The first one is from 1969. It was the winner of the Best Picture in 1970 at the Oscars. It was directed by John Schlesinger, who also directed Sunday Bloody Sunday, Marathon Man, and The Falcon and the Snowman. It has a 91% on Rotten Tomatoes, and we're talking about Midnight Cowboy. Had you seen this before, Sean?
I had not seen this before.
I watched it for the first time as well. Very intense.
Bleak.
Very depressing. Almost.
Yeah. I was really impressed, considering it came out in 1969. I was impressed with the homoerotic overtones.
Right.
I was impressed with the implied incest, mm-hmm. the implied rape. There were a lot of really, really
taboo subjects.
Taboo subjects that were handled very tastefully
mm-hmm.
in this movie. So I, you know, hats off to Schlesinger for that. And, you know, Dustin Hoffman was Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah.
A little bit caricaturish for but I think the part called
so
for it.
So his character, Dustin Hoffman's character's
yeah.
name is Rico Ratso Rizzo. And that is the basis for the Muppet character, Rizzo the Rat, in The Muppets.
Nice.
He plays a very prominent role in The Muppets Christmas Carol.
I guess we should back up and talk about the characters. He is a resourceful guy.
We're talking about John Voight?
No, we're talking about Rizzo.
Well, let me go ahead and give a quick breakdown. Convinced of his irresistible appeal to women, Texas dishwasher Joe Buck, played by John Voight, quits his job and heads for New York City, thinking that he'll latch on to some rich dowager. Is a dowager just a... Rich, like sugar mama?
Yeah, sugar mama.
All right, so New York, however, is not as hospitable as he imagined, and Joe soon finds himself living in an abandoned building with a Dickensian layabout named Enrico Ratso Rizzo, played by Dustin Hoffman. The two form a rough alliance, and together they kickstart Joe's hustling career just as Ratso's health begins to deteriorate. That was the saddest part for me, was watching him decline in health and you know, not being able to function in day-to-day activities. Ratso's dream is to go to Florida.
Right.
And spoilers from 1969, they eventually get on a bus to go to Florida, and Ratso doesn't make it. So let's recast it.
Sure.
On that note, we've got John Voight playing Joe Buck. He was 31 at the time. We've got Dustin Hoffman, who was 32 at the time, playing Ratso. We've got Sylvia Miles playing Cass, who was the first Jane that Joe Buck hooks up with and ends up paying her money. Then we've got Brenda Vaccaro playing Shirley. Now, remind me what her character was.
Well, she was one of his Janes because he meets her at a party.
Right.
A very wild hippie kind of party.
And she kind of takes a shine to him.
She does. But it turns out she's a professional, a very well put together, well to do person. And she's going to introduce him to some of her friends.
Right. First up, Joe Buck, 31 at the time. What do you got, Sean?
Oh, man. It's tough to recast him, but he had that, John Voight did a great job of portraying himself as that cocksure kind mm-hmm. of Texas boy from the country. And that optimism was eternal in his role. I mean, that's what drove him from point A to point B in this film.
The gleam in his eye.
Yeah, I mean, he never lost his optimism, which I thought was kind of interesting. So I'm going with another actor who is, he's 33 years old. And he was in films like Everybody Wants Some, ironically.
Oh, I like that.
he was in Cold in July and 22 Jump Street. And most recently in the much debated on how good his performance was in the film Overlord. It's Wyatt Russell.
Ha ha, interesting.
Oh?
I did not pick him for this. I went with an actor who is 31 now. He's in Observe and Report. He's in The Master. He's in Bridge of Spies. And he's engaged to Kirsten Dunst. Some people refer to him as Meth Damon. His name is Jesse Plemons.
Love some Jesse Plemons.
Jesse Plemons is pulling off the Joe Buck.
I can see that. Yeah.
He could also pull off the Julian Buck.
Shout out.
All right. Go Canada. All right, so next up, we've got Dustin Hoffman, who was 32 at the time, playing Rico Ratso Rizzo, the basis for the Muppet character Rizzo the Rat. And who did you pick for this?
I went with a 33-year-old actor for this as well. However, I would not have recast him 2 months ago. I would not have thought him capable of the role.
Okay.
But now my opinion has changed. He is known from movies such as Transformers and Fury, but most recently he's taken a positive turn.
I thought about this.
In the film Honey Boy and the very, very great Peanut Butter Falcon.
Have you seen Honey Boy yet?
Shia LaBeouf. No,
I want to see Honey Boy.
I'm not.
Shia LaBeouf, man. I thought about him for this as well.
I think he could totally do it.
Very interesting, man. We're thinking along the same terms. All right, well, my actor, did you say 33?
I've got him down as 33 years
old. I've got 32, but I was just going by the year. So
33.
My actor was in The Spectacular Now. He was in Whiplash. He was in War Dogs. And he's going to be in the new Top Gun Maverick. It's Miles Teller.
I thought about Miles Teller. Yeah.
Miles Teller. You know, when you do this show for a couple of years, you develop a stable of actors.
Yeah, I had not cast Miles Teller in a while, and I don't think I'd cast Shia LaBeouf in a while, and I was he was high on my list.
All right, next up we've got Cass. She's the aging dowager, but she does not feel that she should ever have to pay for a man's company. In fact, they should pay her for her company,
and she succeeds.
And so she was 45 at the time. How did you feel about this?
Oh, boy. She had a rocking body.
Yeah.
But boy, did she look way, way older than 45.
And her, that may have been her makeup. Face looked older. Her body looked younger.
Yeah. Yeah. She was,
her neck right at 45 though.
Meet in the middle. So yeah, I wanted to go with an actress who was along the same age, 47 years old. And this role's probably beneath her, but hey, we're fantasy recasting. She's been in some fantastic movies. She was in About a Boy. She was in Muriel's Wedding.
Mm-hmm.
She was in Little Miss Sunshine. And she was in the fantastic Hereditary. I'm talking about Toni Collette.
Toni Collette's great. That's a good pick. All right, well, I went with an actress who is 45 now. She was in Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene. It's not Elizabeth Olsen. She was in 12 Years a Slave. She was in Bird Box. She was in Glass. But most people would know her from most seasons of American Horror Story. It's Sarah Paulson.
I thought about Sarah Paulson.
Sarah Paulson.
Man, we are just, yeah, this mm-hmm. is, that was a
we're
good
jiving,
pick.
Dude. We're jiving.
Totally.
All right, next up, we've got Shirley, played by Brenda Vaccaro, who was 30 at the time. And she was a real cutie. And so what did you go for with this one?
All right, this one's a little bit more of a outlier, kind of like out of right field kind of pick for me. Because she's not as well known as these other three.
Are you left-handed?
Actors. I am.
Okay, because normally people say out of left field.
Did I say right field?
Yes. It's kind of out of right field for me.
Well, it is, yeah.
Yeah.
I would never, you know, anyway. She was in the TV show The Killing. Remember that?
Yeah.
She was in The Carrie Diaries, that CW show that was a spinoff of Sex
about
in the
Sissy SpaceX?
No, a spinoff of Sex in the City.
Oh, okay. Oh, Carrie, yeah.
How to Get Away with Murder. But she was the co-star of the Jay Baruchel show Man Seeking Woman.
Oh, I like that show.
She played the role of Lucy.
Uh-huh.
Her name is Katie Findlay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. I like it. That's good. There's some good face value there as well.
I agree.
All right. So my actress is 30, same age. She was in Remember the Titans. She was in Scream 4. She was in Nashville, the TV show. She was also the cheerleader on Heroes. Her name is Hayden Panettiere.
I shopped her too.
That's crazy town, dude. All right, so we need to talk a little bit more about this movie. Having never seen it before, wow. What a roller coaster ride. Like, there, so much emotion is put on the screen. So many high hopes and ambitions that just end up in the gutter. It also shows a very ungentrified version of New York.
That's what I was going to say. It painted a beautiful picture of the way I remember New York as I was growing up. That's the way New York was described to me.
And
that's
depicted
the way
it in was comics depicted. And movies and
totally,
everything.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm walking here.
Oh, yeah. You got to mention that. This is the film that features that iconic, I'm walking here. I'm walking here.
Whereas he was actually just jaywalking and the cab was about to hit him.
But it's such a total New York kind of personality
for
and
sure.
thing to say.
With that, we will go ahead and go to intermission. But not before we say, let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. And get ourselves some nothing, because my anaconda don't want none. All right, Chop Shoppers, thank you for bearing with us during intermission. This is your host, Travis, and I just have one question for you, Sean. What is one way we could make our podcast more prominent?
Oh, if our listeners would rate and review us on iTunes.
Rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes,
And pin your friends down and force them to do it.
Make them go ahead and do a review. We're very under reviewed.
Like make it a whole pyramid scheme. Get the people under them to do it. And multiply
a podsy scheme.
Ooh, I like it.
Yes. You folks who are listening right now, it would be fantastic if while you're listening or right after, you don't have to stop the show. Don't stop the show. But if afterwards you could go to iTunes and give us a review or a rating, that would be awesome as well. Or on whatever podcatcher app it is that you're listening to us. We're on a few of them. And also, be aware of our online presence. We have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/cinemachopshop. We're hosted natively online on Podbean. It's Cinema Chop Shop on Podbean. And our Twitter handle is @CinemaChopShop. We do a lot of stuff on there, like our 2019 movie marathon, where Sean consistently kicks my ass. Also, our email address is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. You can email us anytime. We check it frequently. The beers that we check in after intermission, you're about to find out about some, are always checked in on Untappd. That's UNTAPPD. And we are Cinema Chop Shop on there. Once again, thank you to you, the listeners. Thank you for tuning in. And enjoy the rest of the show.
And now, on with the show.
All right, we're back. Thank you, Chop Shoppers, for bearing with us during the intermission. We are back and we're going to do... What are we going to do?
A beer check-in.
It's a beer check-in. And it's not an on-theme beer. Sorry, guys. There are no John Voight-themed beers. But we do have a new beer that we've never checked in before. What is it, Sean?
This is from Creature Comforts Brewing Company in Athens, Georgia.
Oh, I like them.
And this is Duende... Hazy double IPA.
Very nice. Now, the can art, at least the color palette, is similar to Tropicalia,
yeah,
which is a beer by them that I very much enjoy.
So hopefully, oh, by the way, I'll tell you the breakdown. It's Citra, Mosaic, and Simcoe.
Okay.
You can't really go wrong with those three.
Those are good hops.
So I'll pour those as you get started with our...
2019 movie marathon. All right, so this is a segment where... Sean and I work very diligently to try to see as many new movies as we can throughout the calendar year. And as of this recording, it is the 361st day of the year, and I'm proud to say I'm on number 372.
Very nice, sir.
I passed the finish line, and I'm just going to keep going on my cool-down lap until New Year's, where we get to start all over again.
It's not how you start, it's how you finish.
And do you know what number you're on, sir?
I am on 394. I haven't checked in the National Treasure movie that I watched
okay.
this afternoon.
Oh, you could very well hit 400, dude. You're only six away, and it's only...
Oh, this is good. This is a bright, sparkly...
It's only 4 days... from the end of the year.
This is a very bright, fruity.
Yeah, it's delicious.
Juicy. Really nice.
I'm a big fan of them. The only thing I'm not a fan of is that if you go to the brewery, they make you do the tour to get to-go beer. You have
They got nailed. Georgia, very well known. Georgia still has some strange rules, or at least I think they corrected them, actually.
Draconian.
I think they corrected them. I don't think you still have to get the tour. When was the last time you were there?
It's been a little while.
Okay. They changed it within the last year and a half, I think.
Okay.
And, but yeah, they were the ones who got nailed for not doing the tours and got fined pretty heavily.
Gotcha. Another thing is that they almost always are sold out of Creature Comforts Tropicalia. And the Five Points Bottle Shop in Athens is almost sold out, almost always sold out of it. But if you go to the, I think it's Whole Foods that's next to the Five Points Bottle Shop, you can get it by the case.
I really like this beer.
It's delicious.
Yeah, as it's starting to warm up here in this.
Did you say it's a double IPA?
It's a double. It's 8%.
You don't taste the booziness.
No, not at all.
That's good. All right, well, movie marathon, my first check-in. Dun, da, da, da. It's going to be Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. This was number 365 for me. I intentionally waited on a couple of movies so that I could make this number 365.
Good for you.
Because I had very high expectations for this movie. And I was slightly disappointed. So my official review, while I wouldn't say that it was great, it was good. It just felt like they were trying too hard to check all the boxes and tie up loose ends. Now, Sean, you trademarked a alternate title
yes.
for this movie. What is it?
It should have been called The Pandering Menace.
The Pandering Menace. And you're also going to talk about this one, right?
Yeah, if you'd let me know when you're done, or I'll jump in, whichever.
Go ahead.
Okay. I said it was an adequate final chapter, but the lip service paid to the basement-dwelling neckbeards was too much.
Yeah.
And the guys at Red Letter Media did a 1-hour and 10-minute review of this. Wow. And I think they really hit the nail on the head when it was like, the minute you stop to think about, well, why is this happening? They're like, don't pay any attention to that. Look at this. And it's like, they keep shuffling things in front of you. And there are so many ridiculous, unnecessary elements that the core story was glossed over. I think the whole Rey and Kylo resolution was rushed. I think that...
they only had time to kiss. They could have at least had a quickie.
Yeah, exactly. But also the dynamic between Finn and Poe and Rey was lost because so much, and this isn't a spoiler, so much of their time was spent apart from one another.
Right.
So there's some really strange things, I think, that were disconnects for me that kept this movie from being a lot better than it could have been.
Also, that new black girl character clearly had the hots for Finn. And
she clearly did, but then at the same time, it's like, why were the horse people there
in the first place?
Was it really necessary? Yes, we get it that they were also stormtroopers at one point. And then you had this strange thing with like her and Billy Dee Williams. And it's like, is he going to tell her that he's her father? There was some bizarre.
Yeah, that was bizarre. As though there could only be 3 or 4 black families in the galaxy.
But they were introducing these themes and just like moving on to the next thing. So I think the best thing that Red Letter said was, this is almost like the outline for a 3-season TV show.
Yeah, and so the first act would have been 1 season.
Totally.
Gotcha. Yeah, I agree with that. I will say that this is the first time since we've been doing this show that a Star Wars movie has come out and it's not making my top whatever list of the year.
Oh, so you've rolled back on that?
Yeah, okay. I bumped it, dude.
Yep, I'm afraid it's not going to make my top either.
And what I bumped it for, sneak preview, is Jojo Rabbit. This is my check-in number 366. Jojo Rabbit came out in 2019. It's an absurdly hilarious dark comedy set in World War II era Germany. Jojo is a fully indoctrinated Hitler youth who discovers a family secret that turns his world upside down. Now, this is from director and co-starring Taika Waititi. Hilarious. I couldn't get enough of it. Scarlett Johansson is in there as well. Her character is kind of on the fringe, but there's some things I don't want to spoil. I don't believe you've seen it yet.
I have not.
But yeah, Jojo Rabbit's going to make it into my top 19.
Very good. I need to try to
get also, the kid is going to be in the remake or reboot of Home Alone.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. All right. I'm going to check in The Lighthouse.
Oh, speaking of dark.
Which I know you saw. This is the Robert Eggers' second A24 film. Oh, man. This stars Robert Pattinson and
Willem Dafoe.
Willem Dafoe as two seafaring, well, I guess they're not seafaring because they're manning the lighthouse, but they are.
So it's the lighthouse keeper and the Wixman.
The Wixman, which is basically his assistant.
Yeah.
His bitch.
Yeah.
frenetic, claustrophobic, filthy tale of a dysfunctional relationship with just a kiss of tentacle porn.
Yeah, there is a little bit of that, too.
It's deserving of a second viewing. This is one of those movies where I know I missed a lot. Number one, Willem Dafoe's accent, probably authentic for the time and his region and whatever. I had a hard time following what he was saying for about the first 15 minutes, 20 minutes of the movie.
Gotcha.
Until I kind of got the cadence and the rhythm of how he spoke. So I want to go back and listen to him again. But also, there's just a lot that happens in this small, confined space that I know I missed.
And there's a good maybe 20 minutes of it that's almost like a fever dream.
Totally, when they're drunk
and
fighting and not
fighting. If they just would have quit drinking that booze, they probably could have sorted it out. Yeah, I watched it as well. I can't say that I liked it because it was so disturbing, but I am still thinking about it.
Yep. That's going to be the theme in two of my picks for the top 19 of 2019.
All right. So next up, I've got a terrible movie. I don't know how it made it on my list, but it has lifetime movie level corniness and bullshit, but a good cast. It is The Murder of Nicole Brown Simpson. Wild speculation and, like I said, lifetime movie level corniness aside, there is some pretty good face value casting.
Okay.
We've got Mina Suvari from American Beauty and American Pie and everything as Nicole Brown Simpson.
Okay.
We've got, oh gosh, what's her name? She's in Orange is the New Black and Hustle and Flow. Can't remember her name right now, but she plays Faye Resnick. It's weird that I can remember Faye Resnick's name and not the name of this actress.
Papelbaum or whatever?
No.
No.
She's also, or this movie also has characters who are play, or actors who are playing the roles of Chris Kardashian and Bruce Jenner and OJ, the guy who plays OJ. I don't know his name either, but he's a much better face value casting for OJ than Cuba Gooding Jr. was in The People versus O.J. Simpson.
Gotcha.
That being said, the movie itself is awful. It proposes this alternate theory that O.J. was not the perpetrator of the murder.
Oh.
That it was this serial killer known as the cross-country killer, a.k.a. the Casanova killer, and that he also worked in conjunction with O.J., that they knew each other outside of this whole thing. It's just absurd.
Then why did OJ run?
Exactly. Now they do show an interview, the first interview that OJ did after the trial, and he mentions a guy named Charlie. And Charlie is supposed to be the alternate personality of this guy named Glenn, who's played by Nick Stahl in the movie. It's bad.
Oh, man.
It's real bad.
This sounds so bad.
Yeah. So don't watch that. And apparently a bunch of people are mad about it, just at the very idea, the very notion. And I think that maybe OJ might have been the executive producer of the movie.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, let me finish out my check-ins then with another bad, bad movie.
Okay.
And this is in the holiday spirit. I'm checking in Santa Jaws.
Santa Jaws!
And this is from my Twitter review. If a bad movie knows it's bad, does it become good?
I don't know.
Never will you see a marina and a comic shop featured more heavily as settings in the same film. This movie's awful. This kid...
And it's a new movie, right?
It's relatively new.
2018?
Something like that. This kid gets... He's a comic book artist. And I say kid. He's like a junior high school kid. He's got a buddy. And they do comic books together. And they've got this comic they've done called Santa Jaws. And his grandfather gives him this pin. Like this ancient pin that has some sort of cryptic mystical powers. And he... inks over his drawing of Santa Jaws, and Santa Jaws becomes real.
Uh-oh.
And gradually takes out every single one of his family members, mostly.
Do they even live near the ocean?
Oh, they live in like near a marina, so I guess they're coastal. But a lot of the movie is spent from going out to the marina, back to the comic book shop, out to the marina, back to the comic book shop. Hmm. I don't know why.
Because those were the two locations that they had paid to shoot at.
It's bad in that Sharknado kind of bad.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
A lot of
Sharknado Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. But at the same time, you know that the whole movie's done tongue in cheek. They know that it's poorly produced and it's really bad. So
just like Sharknado.
Yeah, so you come to a point where you're like, "Well, we know what this is. So how can you knock it too much?
Just sit back and enjoy
the ride." They're not aspiring to be anything but what it is.
Right.
So there you have it.
Sometimes schlock is okay. Yeah?
Exactly.
All right. Well, that will wrap us up on this week's edition of the 2019 Movie Marathon. Once again, we check these in on Twitter. Mine are under the Cinema Chop Shop handle. And Sean's, what are yours on?
Oh, my handle is a windowless van.
Okay, not creepy at all.
No.
And so we got another beer over there?
This is from Wild Leap Brew Company out of LaGrange, Georgia. And I bought a shit ton of their IPAs, and this is probably their strangest one. I've seen this checked in a few times on Instagram by some beer connoisseurs. It's called Truck Chaser, and this is a strawberry eclair double IPA.
Hmm.
This is supposed to evoke the nostalgia of chasing the ice cream truck down the street. As a matter of fact, there's a quote on the back of the can. It says, "Throw down some money. The ice cream man is coming." Eddie Murphy.
Okay. So there was an episode of Bob's Burgers I watched recently. I think it was this recent season where their babysitter arrives in her boyfriend's ice cream truck. And of course, Bob and Linda are off at a getaway, but the kids convince the babysitter to let them ride out in the ice cream truck.
It's sweet. This is what you would call a dessert beer.
Isn't an eclair a pastry?
Yeah. Okay.
So why did they say eclair if they're talking about ice cream trucks?
I don't know. I guess they're going for this strawberry cream kind of thing.
I think it's tasty.
Yeah, it is what it is. I wouldn't drink a lot of this.
Yeah. Sweet beers are not my forte. Just like Katie wearing more clothes, it's not her forte. Enough about Letterkenny.
New season just dropped, by the way.
Really? Yeah. I'm on season 3.
Oh man, you've got a long way to go.
So, they keep referencing things from a long time ago. All right, so next up, what do we got?
Well, I'm done. Are we doing the recast?
The recast continues.
Part 2.
The sequel.
Revoit.
Revoit. Rebate. And so the movie is from 1978. It was directed by Hal Ashby.
We love Hal Ashby.
We've talked about before. He directed Harold and Maude, The Last Detail with Randy Quaid and Jack Nicholson, and also Being There, which we've talked about on this.
This guy's a winner.
The movie is called Coming Home, and it is about a conservative housewife whose husband is deployed to Vietnam, who decides to volunteer at a veterans hospital, and a paraplegic veteran.
Who she went to high school with.
They make a connection. And eventually they hook up.
While her husband's deployed.
Yeah, so he's the Jody in this situation. And Bruce Dern plays the husband. Let me actually read the thing. The wife of a Marine serving in Vietnam, Sally Hyde, played by Jane Fonda, decides to volunteer at a local veterans hospital to occupy her time. There she meets Luke Martin, played by John Voight, a frustrated wheelchair-bound vet who has become disillusioned with the war. Sally and Luke develop a friendship that soon turns into a romance. But when her husband Bob, played by Bruce Dern, returns unexpectedly, she must decide between staying with him and pursuing her new love. Now, I saw your review. It says it leaves a lot of questions.
Yeah, I don't even think that summary really covers the crux of the movie. I mean, this is one of those Vietnam guilt movies that were very popular in the late 70s and early 80s. You know,
well, Jane Fonda conceived of this movie after meeting Ron Kovic, who was a Vietnam War vet, and he wrote an autobiography called Born on the 4th of July, later made into a movie.
Right.
I would prefer this movie to that any day, though.
I agree. But I think that the more interesting plot line in this film, I mean, yes, she has the romantic interlude with John Voight's character, but I think that the big story point is Bruce Dern returning home. He comes back with this injury.
It was self-inflicted on accident.
He says he tripped and he shot himself in the calf.
Yeah.
And you wonder, did he do it accidentally? Did he do it on purpose? But what bothered me the most about the film was that he comes back and is confronted with this affair. And I don't think his reaction to the affair was really what he was reacting to. I think that he had a deep-seated
resentment.
I think he was fucked up by the war, quite frankly. And ultimately, the end of the film, what happens, I don't think was predicated by the affair at all. I don't think the affair really figures into the equation of what happens to Bruce Dern.
Gotcha.
And so that's the part of it. I was like, well, that was interesting, but mm-hmm. I don't think that really what I saw with my, you know, what was presented to me was really what was going on. I think there was some subtext that was missing, but I did like the film. I thought it was
I did
cool.
as well. I think this is definitely a recommend. The sex scene between John Voight and Jane Fonda, I thought was at first kind of awkward because, you know, he's wheelchair bound with what's going on down there, but then suddenly turned very steamy and super hot, and Jane Fonda had a nice ass for a white girl. As I was typing that quote to you, or as I was typing that text to you, I was just going to write, Jane Fonda had a nice ass. And then in the movie, one of the private investigators says, she's got a nice ass for a white girl. All right, well, the roles that we're going to recast are Sally Hyde, played by Jane Fonda, who was 41 at the time. We've got Luke Martin, played by John Voight, who was 40 at the time. We've got Captain Bob Hyde, played by Bruce Dern, who was 42 at the time. And then Bill Munson, played by Robert Carradine of the Carradines. If you don't know who he was the main nerd in Revenge of the Nerds.
I wish we had cast his wife, V. Munson.
Yes, that's true. She was played overlooked in this recast.
She very much played a big part.
And she's also, that's her brother.
Oh, brother. Yeah. Right. I'm sorry.
Bill Munson's sister is Jane Fonda's / Sally Hyde's friend, who also volunteers at the Veterans Hospital.
Kind of her confidant and shoulder to lean on.
Yeah, she was good too. We probably should have. First up. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
We've got Jane Fonda. She was top billed. She was 41 at the time. She was playing Sally Hyde. And this round, since it's just the two of us, I'll go first.
Go for it.
All right. So my actress is 46 now. She's a little bit older. Okay. But I think that's going to play into the dynamic of the older, conservative, established woman hooking up with a younger wounded veteran. So my actress was in The Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Okay.
She was in The Martian. She was in Downsizing. She was in Welcome to Me. Her name is Kristen Wiig.
Nicely done with the Kristen Wiig.
Kristen Wiig, I think, has a similar bone structure facially as Jane Fonda. Also, I think that she's got tremendous acting chops.
Yep.
As we appreciate here on the Chop Shop.
I agree.
I think that it's good. Michelle said no. Michelle's like, no, she's too old.
I'm okay with that. No.
I think she's just jealous of Kristen.
Well, Kristen Wiig's one of those comedic actresses who I think does really well with serious roles.
Yes.
And I think
Skeleton Twins, for example.
Yeah. Good pick. My actress is 41 years old, and she was in Jack and Jill, Disturbing Behavior, Go, a Batman film.
Oh, yeah, I got it.
And Dawson's Creek. She's seen some fucked up shit.
Yes, she has, because she was married to Tom Cruise.
It's Katie Holmes!
Yes. No shit, Sherlock. Next, we've got the main point of our episode, the subject of our episode, John Voight, who was 40 at the time, playing Luke Martin, and he is the paraplegic/injured veteran who's disillusioned with the war and develops a friendship/romantic relationship with Jane Fonda's character. And my actor was in Ingrid Goes West. He was in Overlord. He was in Goon, the last of the Enforcers. He's the son of Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell. His name is Wyatt Russell.
Nicely done, sir.
Yes. All right, so moving it on.
Who do I have?
Oh, yeah, you.
Who? Well, I wanted to pick John Googe.
The Googe!
For face value, but, you know, to my knowledge, he's not an actor.
And he's not paraplegic.
Well, that's not necessary. But anyway, hi, Googe. I wanted to go with an actor
just
who...
Just Googe it.
I wanted to go with an actor who could plumb the depths of some of the emotional aspects of this role. I mean, it's pretty fucked up coming back and, you know, not having your legs. I feel for those guys. And I think this actor could definitely pull that off. We've seen him do some emotional things throughout his acting career. He was in Pathology. He was in Heroes. He was in Killing Season. But most of us know him from This Is Us. It's Milo Ventimiglia.
Oh, okay. So John Voight's character in Catch-22's name was Milo.
There you go.
Very good. All right, next up, we've got the role of Captain Bob Hyde, played by Bruce Dern. Bruce Dern was 42 at the time. My actor is 48 now.
Okay.
He was in Tomb Raider in 2016.
Oh.
He was in Ant-Man and the Wasp. He was in The Hateful Eight. He was in Django Unchained. He was also in Vice Principals and Justified. His name is Walton Goggins.
Favorite of the show, Walton Goggins.
All right, who's next?
I love it. I went with an actor who, you know, Bruce Dern was typically like a hippie guy.
Yeah.
So for him to play the straight-laced military role was kind of a twist.
Out of character.
Yeah.
And against this, type.
Yeah. So I wanted to go with somebody who is also known for playing some pretty down-and-out kind of out-of-it roles. He was in Employee of the Month. He was in Hit and Run. He was in Chips.
Oh, yeah.
He was in Idiocracy.
Yes.
It's Dax Shepard.
Dax Shepard. I love it. He's more age appropriate, I think. My guy's a little bit older, but also my Jane Fonda is a little bit older.
Yeah, Dax is 44 to Bruce is 43.
And so is Kristen Bell going to come up next?
Maybe his sister.
All right. Next up, we've got the role of Robert Carradine. No, the actor was Robert Carradine. He was playing Bill Munson. He was 24 at the time. My actor, once again, is a little bit older. He was 27 now. He is 27 now. He's in the 2019 version of Shaft. He's in 10,000 Saints. He's in a movie called Tut about King Tut. And he's also Berkeley in Zombieland Double Tap. His name is Avon Jogia. Avon Jogia is going to be the Robert Carradine. We should say a little bit about the character. He's the brother of the friend of Jane Fonda, who's also in the Veterans Hospital, and he's completely spun out / burnt out and is kind of a caricature of Bob Dylan.
Yes.
And so my actor was the hippie guy in Zombieland.
Who claimed that he wrote Bob Dylan songs.
Yes.
Awesome. In that same turn, I wanted to cast somebody who also had that kind of almost hippie vibe. Let's see. We have a 24-year-old Robert Carradine. My guy's 28. He was in movie 43.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
That's a rough ride.
Oof.
Lots of good people in it, though.
Yes, I know, right? He was in Bad Turn Worse.
Is that the sequel to Bad Turn or Wrong Turn?
I don't think so. He was in Rob the Mob.
Sequel to Married to the Mob?
Sure, why not? But everyone has seen him grow up on the TV show Shameless. as Lip Gallagher.
It's Lip.
Jeremy Allen White.
Yeah, I can see it.
A little bit of a face value, but
yeah,
also
for sure.
He's got chops, so he's good.
He also has a little bit of Bob Dylan-esque features.
Right.
For sure. Yeah, I like it.
I think we both did a fine job.
Well, our recast today seemed to be a rehashing of the stables of actors, or the catalog full of actors, the binder full of actors.
Yeah, I have to admit, some of these I did pull from my saved actors that I picked. So,
well, like I guilty. Said, you do this show for so long, you only have so many to pick from. I mean, we could go with unknowns,
but
and
that
then
be
nobody's going to know who we're talking about.
Yeah, unless we like send like an annotated bibliography.
So overall opinion of Coming Home.
I liked it. I thought it was good. I don't like it as much as Midnight Cowboy, of course. But
right.
It's a good flick. If you've never seen it, check it out. It's not as easy to find as Cowboy, of course.
I don't like it as much as Midnight Cowboy, but I like it way better than Born on the 4th of July.
Well, I like it way better than Lara Croft Tomb Raider.
There you go. All right, so that will wrap us up on the recast part two, which brings us to the bonus segment. The bonus segment this week is going to be, once again, a battle royale between, are you ready?
I'm ready.
John Voight, Avoid, and The Noid. Once again, the battle royale is between John Voight, Avoid, and The Noid. So what are you going to go with, Sean?
Well, Avoid easily being like, what, a black hole?
It's nothingness.
Yeah, yeah. Ah, jeez.
John Voight, Avoid, and The Noid.
You know, it's funny you should say that. I was thinking about titling the episode, I Stared Into the Voight, and the Voight stared back at me.
There you go.
So I'm going to have to go with The Void.
Okay.
I've got to go with The Void. It is ever present. And once you get close to its abyss, you're done for.
It just sucks you in.
Right.
Much like Florence, South Carolina.
Amen.
So I'm going to go with The Noid because he's powered by pizza. Other people's pizza. That's OPP. And even though John Voight in this picture has a shotgun, he's not going to be able to avoid The Noid.
Well, The Noid's made of clay anyway. Shotgun's not going to do anything.
Claymation.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. I want to thank the engineer, ask you if you have any plugs.
Well, we've got a New Year's party coming up at Seminar Brewing.
Brew Year's Eve.
Brew Year's Eve.
And so we're going to plug that. Also, thank you for what you do every week.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
Week in, week out. You accommodate so well.
Oh, I do want to plug the minisode.
Oh, we've got an upcoming minisode. It's going to come out on Tuesday or something.
Yeah.
It is our top 19 movies of 2019. Now, I was thinking that we would not do them ranked. We would just go down the list.
We didn't. That's what we did last year. Yeah. We were just like, these are in no particular order. And caveat, these are the movies we've seen in 2019.
Yes.
This is by no means all encompassing of what was released.
There we go. All right. Also, we want to talk about next week's episode. Do you know what it is?
Oh, this is the Secret Society episode.
Secret Societies. Illuminati, all through your body. And so I do have a trivia question. It is not for trivia because there is no trivia this week, this upcoming week. The next trivia will be on January 6th, I believe. But I do have a trivia question for you, Sean.
Hit it.
Skull and Bones, a secret society at Yale University, was founded in 1832, and this actor, known for numerous roles including Sergeant Hill in Saving Private Ryan, Bob Zamuda in Man on the Moon, and John Maxwell in Big Mama's House, is a Yale graduate. He's also the son of a Yale professor who was later the president of the university and the commissioner of Major League Baseball. Was also a member himself of Skull and Bones. Do we know who that actor is?
I don't. I could have cheated because you asked me early in the episode.
You could have looked it up.
I could have looked it up, but I didn't.
You want to just throw one out, I guess?
Owen Wilson.
Paul Giamatti. Paul Giamatti. Really? Is a Yale graduate. He's got not only an undergrad, but also a master's from Yale. He was a member of Skull and Bones. His father was a professor there. His father was president of the university and commissioner of baseball.
I love Paul Giamatti. That's great.
Didn't know that about him, though, did you?
No.
All right. We also want to plug the podcast itself. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us on whatever it is that you're listening to us on. If it's Spotify, if it's whatever, iTunes, go ahead, give us a rating, give us a review, give us a subscription. We're also located natively online. It's Cinema Chop Shop on podbean.com. We're on Twitter. We're at Cinema Chop Shop. We are on Facebook. We're Cinema Chop Shop on there. And we're also, we have an email address. It's cinemachopshop@gmail.com. I laugh because I check it every single day. And also, the beers that we checked in today are going to be checked in also on Untappd. That's UNTAPPD. We're Cinema Chop Shop on there. And finally, thank you to the listeners, the Chop Shoppers out there. We couldn't do it without you. Please remember to
watch, chop, retrofit.
And Happy New Year!